Next case is 091516, Thai Me Frozen Foods, the United States. Mr. White.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. This Court should reverse the Court of International Trade's refusal to accord the proper amount of deference to the Department of Commerce's determination of the proper constructed value profit for Thai May calculated under a statutory alternative that provided that Commerce could use any other reasonable method for determining constructed value profit in this this instance. This case is essentially about deference owed to the Department of Commerce. As this Court has stated on many occasions, Commerce is the master of the anti-dumping law. The Supreme Court has recently, in the Eurodif decision, made it very plain that the issue in deciding cases such as this is not whether the trial court's reasoning or alternative method for determining a particular value was better than what Commerce did, but rather whether what Commerce did was reasonable. And in this case, unlike a lot of other cases that come before this Court involving the Department of Commerce, is a case where even more attention should be given to the deference owed. Unlike most Chevron Step 2 cases in which there is a statutory provision which is not completely filled in by Congress, and the Department of Commerce is essentially filling a gap by making a determination where Congress hasn't spoken. In this instance, we're dealing with a particular statute, Alternative 3 of Section 1677B2B, which provides a very broad, one of the broadest expressions of discretionary authority that's given to the Department of Commerce to determine constructed value in this instance using any other reasonable method. And that provides quite a bit of discretion. We're not suggesting, of course, that there is some super Chevron standard to be applied in a case like this, but certainly the nature of this statute, this broad level of deference afforded, should have been considered more by the trial court.
We're talking about statutory interpretation here, right? 1677, and didn't the Court of International Trade hold that any other reasonable method could not include the ordinary cost of trade limitation because it was in 2A and not B3?
Well,
basically the point?
He actually didn't specifically say that the statute Alternative 3 excluded the possibility forever of Commerce including or excluding below cost sales, because it's recognized in the statute that there is no limitation in Alternative 3 to use below cost out of the ordinary course of trade sales. But what the trial court decided, and we believe incorrectly, was that Commerce had somehow, in interpreting Alternative 3, included in it a general preference, a statutory preference, for the exclusion of below-cost sales because of the exclusion of below-cost sales in what is referred to as the preferred method of calculating CV profit in Section E2A. And as we've stated in the briefing, that was essentially a straw man argument which misread Commerce's remand determination in the case and the reasoning behind what Commerce did. And what Commerce did in this instance was to recognize that in an Alternative 3, there is broad discretion to use below-cost sales in some instances, to exclude below-cost sales in some instances. Congress had pretty much left it wide open, and that it was reasonable, not as a matter of reading into Alternative 3 a statutory preference, but it was reasonable to mimic the statutory preference that is expressed directly in Section E2A of the statute, and as we've argued in our briefing, more fundamentally across all of the normal value
statute. Ordinary course of trade.
Ordinary course of trade, which in this instance we're talking primarily about below-cost sales. Ordinary course of trade also is a phrase which refers to the need for commerce in determining normal value across a number of these methods to eliminate certain below-cost sales that have exceeded or below a certain cost over a certain period of time, and to exclude, in many instances, affiliated sales.
You're just arguing this case, not that ordinary course of trade always excludes below-cost sales.
Correct, and that was never stated in either the original issues and decisions memorandum that Commerce published along with the original investigation results, or in the remand determination that the court criticized in its decision.
It seemed to be the court's concern, though, that instead of this calculation being driven by the facts or specific circumstances in this case, that the determination was driven by a statutory interpretation of some parallelism between A and B with respect to ordinary course of trade, and that would amount to a flat-out rule that would be applied in every case.
It was a misreading, and you're correct in characterizing exactly what Judge Dansu felt was the problem with Commerce's determination, but it's a misreading of the reasoning in the remand determination. They've never suggested, and in fact, they've admitted and discussed in the remand determination that in fact, in some cases in which constructed value profit is calculated under alternative three, below cost sales are included. They're included primarily in those circumstances in which the calculation is based on financial statements and other broad data that doesn't involve the subject goods under investigation, and therefore the transaction-specific information that would be required and the cost information that would be required to determine whether the sales were below cost isn't available. So there are many instances, and in fact, it would seem that in most instances in which alternative three is utilized by Commerce, it isn't this fact pattern. What made this fact pattern unique, or unusual at least, was the fact that here, because the constructed value profit for Taimei was being calculated based on the data from the other respondents in the investigation dealing with the subject merchandise, there could be a exclusion of below-cost sales, which might normally not be possible. And
I guess in this case, you have data available with respect to the other respondents so that a calculation was made under Section A, and those calculations included matters in the ordinary course of trade and excluded the below-cost.
Correct.
Calculation. So Commerce's rationale, as I understand it, is that a proper comparison and a proper analysis would, in this case, just as in the other two calculations, not include the below-cost amounts.
Well, the reasoning was partially based on the availability of the data, which I've just explained is not common in many of these cases in which by the time you get to alternative three, and recognizing that this is also a facts available instance where alternative three was calculated without reference to the profit cap because there wasn't sufficient data regarding home sales in Thailand of either the subject merchandise or even goods in the same class or category as the subject merchandise to allow for the calculation of the profit cap. So Commerce was essentially using alternative three in a facts available circumstance as is permitted under section 1677E. And in that circumstance where this data was available and where it was, there was a consistency that they were trying to foster across different respondents in the same investigation, the reasoning going that we calculated the profit for these two other respondents, Rubicon Group and Union Frozen, using Canadian sales, excluding ordinary course of trade sales that were below cost. And so since we're using that very same data for the purposes of calculating Taimei's CV profit, it would seem to be unfair or have some inconsistencies with using that data differently for Taimei than it was used for the other respondents in the same investigation. And this is not unprecedented, as was pointed out in the remand determination, in cases such as the administrative determination involving fresh Atlantic salmon from Chile. Commerce has, in other circumstances, used the weighted average of other respondents' profit calculations in a similar way. But essentially, I think, Judge Lynn, you really pointed to what we believe is the problem with the trial court's decision, is that the reasoning behind it, that somehow Commerce is tying its own hands here by having read into Alternative 3 a statutory presumption or some sort of a preference that would be applied across the board or in many other cases other than one case with very specific and unique fact pattern like this one, is not supported by the language of Commerce's determination. So what we're stuck with here is an instance where, like I said, this is very broad deference to use any other reasonable method in a circumstance which is also a facts available circumstance where Commerce also is a fairly broad discretion in determining values where information, based on the availability of information, in a circumstance where there's no market in Thailand for this warm water shrimp, no viable market, at least for the purposes of calculating normal value, no market which is viable for calculating Taimei's profit under alternative one, which would essentially be using their own data for sales of merchandise in the same class or category of merchandise. There wasn't any data for that. And so under alternative three, in this circumstance, this was an eminently reasonable way for Commerce to have determined this. And as I've pointed out, Commerce's determination here is what should govern in the absence of conflict with congressional.
All right. Let's hear from the other side. Right?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Rushberg.
May it please the court. I'll move directly to some of the issues that Mr. White has discussed. I heard Mr. White say that the question of whether sales outside the ordinary course of trade could be included or excluded under alternative three is left wide open by the statute. These sales could be included in some cases, excluded in others, wide open. That seems to me to be directly at odds with the position that Commerce has taken throughout this case and throughout the proceedings below at the CIT. Commerce has taken the position that there was a congressional preference inserted into the statute for the exclusion of sales outside the ordinary course of trade. The very existence of subparagraph A, I use that term to refer to section 773E2A of the URAA. The very existence of subparagraph A creates a congressional preference for the exclusion of sales outside the ordinary course of trade. That position is unreasonable. It's an unreasonable reading of
this. This simply drawing or observing the structure of this statute and drawing some parallelism between sections A and the determinations that should be made under Section B, and I don't think they're stating that there is a per se rule or a requirement or even a presumption.
Commerce's position seems to be both that there's a congressional preference and in this case that it was reasonable to interpret the statute to mimic subparagraph A, in particular the sales outside the ordinary course of trade restriction in subparagraph A.
But even if that argument was somehow viewed as being inappropriate, there were other bases for their determination of how to calculate the profit under the facts of this case, and isn't that entitled viewing all of their calculation in the entirety to deference as being reasonable?
Commerce's interpretation is owed Chevron deference, but Commerce's interpretation in this case is not reasonable, and its decision based on the three facts that it cited on remand is not based on substantial evidence. Commerce cited, in fact, only three facts for the first time on remand. Two of those facts are really conditions precedent for the selection of any respondents in any dumping investigation and are not related to Tai Mei. None of the facts are rationally connected in any way to Tai Mei's experience and to the calculation of a profit rate for Tai Mei. So putting aside the preference argument, even looking at the factual situation, there is no evidence on the record that based on two other respondents' third country sales, Commerce could reasonably draw the conclusion that Tai Mei would have sold below cost, and that it's reasonable to exclude these sales outside the ordinary course of trade from Tai Mei's CV profit calculation. What's more, the statute that requires a reasonable method, it requires more than just a reasonable result. It's a reasonable method. So it's not just the result, but how Commerce got there. The SAA, because I should note, as Mr. White states, any reasonable method is broad language. It potentially gives a lot of discretion to Commerce. And because of that, in drafting the URAA, Congress sought to make sure that discretion was not abused. And in the SAA, Commerce is required, under Alternative 3, to give a description of the CV profit methodology chosen and an explanation for why it was chosen. So not only is it important how Commerce got there, but why. The why must be reasonable. In this case, it's not a reasonable explanation that Commerce chose to get to this rate because the data were available and to mimic a different provision that doesn't even apply. All the parties are in agreement that subparagraph A does not apply in this case, and therefore it should have no further relevance in interpreting subparagraph B. There's no evidence, no indication that the three alternatives of subparagraph B were meant to replicate subparagraph A or were meant to get to the same result that one would obtain under subparagraph A. They're clearly different as written. Alternative 1 applies to sales in the same general category of products. Alternative 2 applies to other respondents' profit experience, while subparagraph A is very explicit. It only applies to the respondent under investigation and to that respondent's actual amounts incurred in the foreign-like product. That cannot be carried over into this case. And as the CIT said, it's not possible to glean from the language of subparagraph a congressional intent to exclude sales outside the ordinary course of trade in the other three alternatives, alternative three in particular in this case. Commerce's position based on its statutory preference, as we stated, is not reasonable. If one looks at the statute, it does not have any ordinary course of trade restriction in alternative three. Had Commerce had this preference when it drafted the URAA, it could have articulated a preference in any number of ways, either in the statute or the legislative history, any number of ways without strictly inserting a across-the-board restriction in alternative three. But there is none. There is not a hint of a preference. In fact, the legislative history and the SAA state that a methodology under Alternative 3 will be determined on a case-by-case basis, and the decision whether to exclude sales outside the ordinary course of trade will be made on a case-by-case basis. And the United States notes in the SAA that it is not making any benchmarks or methods for the application of Alternative 3. Shortly after the promulgation, after the passage of the URAA, Commerce promulgated its implementing regulations, and in the preamble to those regulations, Commerce again notes its understanding that the decision whether to exclude sales outside the ordinary course of trade must be made on a case-by-case basis. And in fact, Commerce's language is that there may be instances where it is necessary to exclude sales outside the ordinary course in order to obtain a reasonable profit method. So Commerce's understanding shortly after the passage of the URA is that, if anything, Commerce's normal position would be to include all such sales under Alternative 3, unless it could be shown that it were necessary to do so. This is not a case in which it is necessary to do so. There is still a fair profit rate that Commerce calculated on its second remand by including all of the third country sales of the two other respondents, including sales outside the ordinary course of trade. Moreover, it's important that Commerce has never before this case articulated or relied upon the preference that it asserts before this court. It has never, since the passage of the URAA, issued a decision, or in this case cited a decision, that puts forth this preference for exclusion of sales outside the ordinary course of trade. And in fact, Commerce has relied, has taken methodologies in other cases that run contrary to this position. So the fact that Commerce before this case has never seen fit in all of the Alternative 3 cases to mention this preference or to rely on it undermines the argument that this is a congressional preference that must have been placed in the statute at the time that Congress drafted it.
There's nothing in this statute that would preclude Commerce from determining on a case-by-case basis to exclude below-cost sales, correct?
That's correct. It must be made on a case-by-case basis based on the facts and circumstances of a particular case. In this case, there are no facts or circumstances to support exclusion of sales in the ordinary course of trade.
Well, Commerce did set forth some reasons why they did what they did and why they excluded below-cost sales. They talked about the similar sales and same method of determining CB profit was available for the other two parties. There were some reasons. You may disagree with the strength or the propriety of those reasons, but there were reasons stated.
There were reasons, but they were not reasons based on facts in this case that are specific to Tai Imei. None of the reasons given by Commerce were related to Tai Imei or based on the facts that show that the methodology was reasonable for Tai Imei. Yes, all three respondents were producers and exporters of frozen shrimp from Thailand. That's why they're all respondents in this case. But the fact that they're all respondents does not mean that one company's experience would mimic another company's experience, especially since Tai Imei did not even sell in Canada, the other two respondents' home markets in this case.
But of course, they're operating under this sort of default provision in Section 3 that, and those cases are traditionally cases where there's an absence of a lot of facts, and that's why you find yourself in that category. So they did draw some parallels. There was sort of overlapping periods of sales, and similar activities, and similar products and things of this sort. So why is it appropriate to reach the conclusion with this sort of deferential standard in place that what they did was unreasonable, given the fact that this statute doesn't preclude them from excluding below-cost sales?
All of the facts stated at best would support the use of the other two respondents' third country sales as a general data set. But none of those facts support the exclusion of sales outside the ordinary course of trade. Commerce brings up the availability of data as a factor. That's simply not a factor here, because the data are available to either include or exclude sales outside the ordinary course of trade. There's no question of whether the data are available in either direction. That's not a factor that indicates that it is reasonable. The availability of data alone doesn't make a methodology reasonable. It's not substantial evidence to support. Commerce must make some decision based on substantial evidence that this is reflective of Tai Imei, that this is in some way related to Tai Imei. Under the standard of review, and I disagree that it's, and in fact, I suppose I agree with Mr. White that it's not a super Chevron standard. This is the regular old Chevron standard and substantial evidence standard. There is no evidence on the record that it is reasonable in this case, given the choice to include or exclude sales based on a case-by-case determination, that the fact that the other two respondents made these sales outside the ordinary course of trade is in any way reflective of Tai Imei, or in any way indicates that Tai Imei may have made those sales. There's no comparison of the company's selling practices or cost structures to indicate that Taimei, even if it had a viable market in Canada or in Thailand, would have made sales below cost, or even if it sold at the same prices as the other two respondents, that that would have been a below-cost sale or a sale outside the ordinary course of trade. Nothing in the department's determination or first remand supports conclusion that it's reasonable to take the other two companies' profit experience in a market in which Taimei did not even participate and to exclude those sales. It's very respondent-specific to exclude sales outside the ordinary course of trade because it's based on a specific respondent's selling practices and cost structure. And there's no evidence in the record to tie those to Taimei. In fact, the ordinary course of trade restriction, it applies in the statute in two places, in subparagraph A and alternative 2. But it generally applies where there are actual data on the record, either for the respondent under investigation in the case of subparagraph A, or for the particular market, the home market, in this case Thailand, in the case of alternative 2. Something to tie it either to the respondent, to the home market, to something that we could say this is substantial evidence, something reasonable, that this is maybe what Taimei would have done had it had a viable home market. But there's no evidence of that in this case. And Commerce, as Your Honor mentions, Commerce does bring up the consistency rationale that it's a reason to treat Taimei like the other two respondents. I think that argument is a red herring. These are three different respondents in very different situations. Taimei did not have a viable comparison market. The other two did have viable comparison markets. In CV Profit, their sales outside the ordinary course of trade were required to be excluded under the statute. For Taimei, there is no such requirement. And in fact, Taimei has not had a sales below cost allegation against it or a finding against it. Taimei is using constructed value for its entire normal value, whereas the other respondents are using constructed value only for the comparison of a few transactions. In some, these are different respondents, and Commerce has an obligation under the statute to calculate dumping margins as accurately as possible for each selected respondent. And there's no reason to treat these three respondents the same just for the sake of sameness. If there were five respondents under investigation and two sold below cost in Canada, there's no reason to believe, based on that fact alone, that the other three would be selling below cost and that it would be reasonable to exclude their sales in the CV profit calculation. If there are no further questions from the court, I think it's appropriate for this court to affirm the decision of the CIT. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr. White.
A few quick points, Your Honors. First point I want to make is I think there's a sense that it doesn't really matter if below-cost sales are excluded or included because the particulars of various sections of Section E2A and B either refer to ordinary course of trade or don't refer to ordinary course of trade. As we've pointed out in the briefing, and as Commerce pointed out in its decision, there's very strong reasons to believe, looking at the language of the statute, the language of the SAA, that Congress had a reason for structuring this the way it was structured. And the reason was is that in some instances, below-cost sales could be considered and excluded where appropriate, and in other cases, Commerce would be relying on broad data sets that wouldn't allow for backing out transactions that are below cost. That's part of the reason that Alternative 1 reads the way it reads. It's because when you're dealing with a product or a group of products that aren't the product that's the subject of the investigation, for which Commerce has reams of data having from interested parties, there will be no easy way, and so as a matter of administrative convenience, above all, probably Commerce is given the authority and the direction and by Congress to make those determinations on the basis of other, you know, financial information. In the instances where the subject merchandise is under consideration, those below-cost sales should normally be eliminated if it's appropriate based on the availability of the data, because that's in keeping with the structure and the purpose of the normal value statute as a whole. And
why is it appropriate to use the same calculation for the for TIME as made with the other two respondents?
Well, one point that's made, to answer your question, Your Honor, is that the facts are that Commerce pointed to were not facts specific to TIME, but that argument could be made in a number of different contexts which are directly stated in the statute. For example, these alternatives are not provided in any hierarchical sense. Commerce is free, if it was possible to use any of them, could have used any of them. And in alternative two, for example, the constructed value profit is determined based on the weighted average of the other respondents in the home market. In that instance, you're not looking at the facts that are specific to the respondent such as Taime either. So within the structure of the statute itself is the idea that this profit calculation might be calculated on the basis of other parties' experience. That's not uncommon at all, particularly in facts available circumstances. So across the board, when Commerce makes determinations using facts available in determining values for the purposes of normal value, it wouldn't be unusual for the individual circumstances of a particular respondent to not be reflected in the data that is used to determine the value for that party. And so alternative two is one of them. And to further answer your question, Your Honor, Commerce made it very plain in the remand determination in this case that there was a reason to believe that these were other respondents were in the same investigation, selling the same product. A lot of that product is going to the United States. In the instance of the other two, Rubicon and Union Frozen, they had a viable third country market in Canada. When Commerce determined that, looking at the ordinary course of trade sales of those other respondents in Canada, that it was a profit could be determined based on the ordinary course of trade sales, recognizing that this shrimp is sold for at profitable prices in the third country market, that it was reasonable to apply that to another respondent in the same investigation where they were using the exact same data to calculate
that. That's a thorough answer. Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Gershberg, in fairness, since this went on quite some time, if you would like to respond to that last point, feel free.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. I'll be very brief. I would just like to make clear that this is not a facts available case in terms of facts available because information were not on the record or because a respondent didn't participate. Taime participated fully in this investigation. Facts available is used in the sense only that the profit cap is not being used in this case. But it's important to look at the evidence in the record. The other three respondents, it's true they were also respondents, but it's not possible to infer from the fact that there were three respondents all selling in the United States market. That's not sufficient, which only deals with U.S. sales. That's not sufficient to infer that the other two respondents' third country sales in Canada, a market in which Taime did not even participate, would be reflective of any way of Taime sales. Therefore, it's not based on substantial evidence. There's no factual basis to make a reasonable conclusion as to Taime CB profit. Thank you, Your Honor.
That's sufficient, right, Mr. White?
Yes.
All right. Case is submitted.